Our next speaker is Mr. Kevin Shea. He's Deputy Administrator for Policy and Program Development at the United States Department of Agriculture, Animal Plant Health Inspection Services. You always have to take a deep breath before you do that. He earned his Juris Doctorate from the University of Baltimore School of Law. In addition to his role as Deputy Administrator for Policy and Program Development, he has also served for 8 years prior to that as Director of APHIS's Budget and Accounting Division. Mr. Shea.
Thank you, Dr. Cook, and let me be the first to say good afternoon. And it is indeed an honor and a privilege to be here. And I am humbled as a simple lawyer and government bureaucrat to be in the company of so many fine scientists and great thinkers. So it is indeed a pleasure to be here. In addressing diseases that cross species boundaries, federal and state regulations, agencies, and authorities connect and interact more like the pieces of a puzzle, really. Each piece has a specific function, and each has an expertise, and each has a defined boundary, but they all have to interlock to work together to reach the goal. We have a piece of that in APHIS, easier to say than the mouthful there, Bob, I guess. In APHIS, our role is to protect the health of the nation's agricultural resources, including livestock. In doing that, we routinely work with state agencies, local agencies, stakeholders, and those stakeholders are constantly changing and increasing, frankly. And more we're involved with conservation groups, and we're happy to do that. Where an issue falls outside of our authorities, for example, in the area of human health, we often will work with the human health agencies, such as CDC and others. I'm pleased we have the opportunity today to talk about that in that broader context, because it has been more piecemeal prior in prior years, and it's much working much better now, as you heard earlier from CDC folks. Our primary mission includes safeguarding livestock from animal health threats. We have two major programs within our agency that addresses CWD. One is veterinary services, and the other is wildlife services. And if I could deviate just for a second, Dr. Lubroth earlier mentioned declining veterinary infrastructure around the world. And that's true in the United States as well. And from the early 80s to early in this decade, the number of veterinarians in the USDA and in all the state agencies decreased by about half. It was a pretty stark thing. And there was an article recently in AVMA's journal about that. Maybe some of you may have seen that. But over half in about 20 years. We've begun to turn that back around in USDA in the last couple of years, but the states, increasingly strapped for funds, can't do that. And so we find that to be a problem not just around the world, but in the United States as well. Farm servants are recognized as livestock, so our veterinary services program works to protect their health from disease threats, including threats like CWD. Wildlife services programs work to protect wildlife and protect agricultural resources like livestock from wildlife. And the disease spread from CWD to livestock could indeed be a problem. And so our Wildlife Services Organization is involved in that as well. What are the challenges with CWD? Some unique challenges. It occurs in multiple species, occurs in both captive herds and free-ranging animals. And we have lots of gaps in knowledge, as you've already heard. And it falls under the authority of many different agencies. It's become an important focus for APHIS over the past several years. And research is underway, again, as you've heard. And we don't know of a case of human transmission, but we can't rule it out, as you've heard also as well. There's no evidence of a link between CWD and BSE. I want to emphasize that. That has been the major focus of our agency, frankly, for the past 9 months has been BSE. I want to talk a little bit about what we are doing with CWD. First, on the veterinary services side, I think I went too far. Our goal is to eradicate CWD from captive servants and to assist states and tribes in addressing CWD in free-ranging deer and elk. You've seen the map already where CWD has existed, and it's appeared in 8 states. We found it in 34 captive servant herds in 8 states. Currently, there are only 5. So 29 have been addressed, but there are still five there. And we have detected it in wild cervids in eight states as well. But they're not the same eight states. So I think that's interesting. Four of the states are the same, but there are, the others are not. So that means we've really found it in 12 different states in actuality. Activities that we are involved in our APHIS veterinary services program. Developing regulations, making cooperative agreements. What that really means is we provide funds to states and tribes mostly for surveillance activities. We conduct surveillance and diagnostic activities, and we administer an indemnity program. When we do have to resort to depopulating, we do pay fair market value for the animals in this program. We have proposed federal regulations. We ironically proposed these regulations in the Federal Register of December 24, 2003. Now, for most of us in APHIS, that was the day when we were waiting for the international lab in England to confirm that we did have one case of BSE in a cow in the state of Washington. So we now refer to that, of course, as the cow that stole Christmas for us in APHIS. This proposed federal herd certification program includes fencing requirements, animal ID and herd inventory measures, surveillance of deaths in animals of 16 months of age and older, depopulation of positive herds, again with a payment of indemnity. And it's a voluntary program so far, except if you don't participate in the program, you won't be able to move these captive animals interstate. Funding. Dr. Dierhofer talked about that a little bit. Indeed, in APHIS, we have $18.5 million available to us this year. More than $5 million of that passes through directly to state wildlife agencies, and another $750,000 passes through to tribal governments. And again, they help us with the surveillance. We don't have the people to do this alone. We have to rely, obviously, on the state and tribal governments to do that work for us. We have placed veterinary medical officers in states with large numbers of farm cervids to help the states with their work. And we've also hired several epidemiologists with specialties in CWD at our Center for Epidemiology and Animal Health in Fort Collins, Colorado, to work on this as well. Diagnostics. Obviously, if we're doing a lot of surveillance, we have to do the diagnostic work. We've contracted and certified 26 state laboratories to do the testing, in addition to our National Veterinary Services Laboratory in Ames, Iowa. We have the capacity to run 250,000 IHC tests every year, and that has proven to be adequate for the amount we've been doing so far. In fiscal year 2003, we tested more than 90,000 wild cervids and 12,000 farm cervids. In 2004, we're going to increase that to about 14,000 farm cervids and 120,000 wild cervids. The indemnity program. Again, I mentioned this earlier. When we do find an infected herd, the best method of dealing with it at this point in time for a captive herd is to depopulate it. And we do depopulate the herd and pay indemnity for that. Let me talk a little bit now about our Wildlife Services program. Wildlife Services responds to requests from states or other federal agencies, deals quite a bit with the Fish and Wildlife Service and Geological Survey as well. We have 23 wildlife disease biologists who are available to participate in wildlife disease surveillance and assist with any emergencies that may occur as well. Wildlife Services works with North Dakota State University, the University of Nebraska, the Smithsonian, and the Southeastern Cooperative Wildlife Disease Study on work for CWD. And these are the 17 states where we are working with Wildlife Services. Some of the things that are going on in the field as well with Wildlife Services is in Maine, for example. The Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife oversees management of wild cervids, while the Maine Department of Agriculture, Food, and Rural Resources regulates most captive cervid facilities. We have put temporary laboratory facilities and additional staff to help both of them with their testing, and we collected over 1,500 deer heads and took 750 brainstem samples from meat cutters, taxidermists, and individual hunters responding to requests for samples. From each of the sampled deer, a portion of the obex and lymph nodes were collected and submitted to the University of Connecticut Wildlife Pathology Lab for testing, and additional samples were frozen and archived with state officials. I think when you hear about the kinds of people we deal with or work with, hunters, taxidermists, we deal with lots of different people in this program, and I think it's very much consistent with the not just the One World, One Health in the international sense, but so diverse in the number of people and the different interests that are involved in this as well. During last year's hunting season, Wildlife Services biologists assisted the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources in sampling harvested white-tailed deer, and we tested over 7,000 in a sophisticated laboratory that we set up in Wisconsin with to do that work. And we're going to do that again this year. So we're working with hunters quite a bit. Part of our Wildlife Services program is the National Wildlife Research Center in Fort Collins, Colorado. And we do research there in cooperation with Colorado State, North Dakota State, many other universities. Right now, we're working on potential CWD transmission routes between captive and wild cervids, long-term exploration of a potential CWD vaccine, and several other studies related to CWD, including barriers between wild and captive cervids. Also, just this past year, we began to evaluate and develop cervid census techniques, including the use of aerial infrared technology for determining population sizes and aiding with removal efforts. We're doing that in conjunction with a private company, the University of Nebraska, and the Fish and Wildlife Service's DeSoto National Wildlife Refuge. In April 2004, in cooperation with Colorado State University, we began a series of studies to evaluate the role that scavengers and predators play in CWD transmission. The first studies are looking at jays and crows, as they seem to have a potential for playing an important role in CWD. I see Colin sitting up there. I want to emphasize, we're studying them, not assuming that they're the problem. We're studying them. I won't get into this too much because previous speaker got into quite a bit. The Interagency National Plan for CWD. APHIS is indeed a big player in that. You saw the dollars involved, and we are in competition for dollars with every other program in the federal government, and we have not received the funding that the plan calls for. But we have received significant funding, and we are moving ahead and implementing the parts of the plan we can with the money we do have. We think we are having some success. We think we'll have continued to have success. And as the research improves and we learn more and more about it, we in APHIS, as the on-the-field regulatory disease eradication agency, will have more tools to work with, and we look forward to doing that and working with everyone in the entire community. So once again, I thank you very much.